Hi, this is Tyson Brown. I'm with the NSTA Press. This marks our fifth installment of the NSTA Press Behind the Books series. Today I'm talking to Gail Jones, Amy Taylor, and Mike Falvo, the authors of Nanoscale Science, Activities for Grades 6 through 12, a book that will help your middle school and high school students understand the big implications of a tiny technology. Gail, Mike, Amy, welcome.
Thanks, Tyson.
Happy to be here.
Mike, tell us what nanoscience is and why nanoscience is an exciting new area of scientific research.
Okay, nanoscience is an area of scientific research that focuses on the molecular scale and the nanoscale, so basically how particles and proteins and large molecules behave and how they may be used in technology. The field is really a hybrid of various basic science fields, physics, chemistry, biology, and material science. And what's new is that we have completely new ways of observing this world, and this has led to some pretty strange new questions and some interesting new answers.
What has changed so that we're able to pursue this field of technology?
Well, the first thing is that we have new tools. So we have microscopes and other instruments that allow us to go down to the scale and see things and analyze things at the molecular scale with really high resolution. And what we can also do is not only image things and see them, but we can manipulate them, pick them up, stretch them, and do any number of experiments that that we want to do. So that's the first advance. Secondly, our ability to make stuff or fabricate particles and structures at this scale has really improved in recent years. So through new chemistry and material science methods, we can make any number of new types of particles. So we can make nano stuff with unprecedented control with new chemical and biological functions. So what's exciting is that these nanoscale objects and nanoparticles and proteins have some new properties that are sometimes unexpected.
Tell me about how nanoscience leads to new technologies. What is happening in nanotechnology now? And where do scientists such as yourself and engineers think it'll be in 15 years?
Well, there's a couple of different areas that I think it's going to impact in the next 15 years. The first is in the biomedical area. Nanotechnology has a huge potential impact areas ranging from prosthesis to new drugs. There's a lot of research in this area. Nanotechnology has really huge potential in the area of drugs. One of the fundamental problems with drugs is their lack of specificity. You have side effects. Chemotherapy is a classic example where we kill a lot of the healthy cells in the body to get rid of the cancer. Mm-hmm. With nanotechnology, we can engineer particles with very specific chemistry to carry the drug to the target tissue and target cells. Mm-hmm. The second big area of applications is in advanced materials for consumer use and industrial use. One type of material is called a smart material. For example, there's a certain type of smart material called a shape memory alloy, which can be trained to assume different shapes when heated. And one area where these are being used is for earthquake-proofing buildings. The shape memory alloy can adjust its shape and stiffness to prevent building collapse.
Huh. But how is that a nanotechnology?
Well, the nanotechnology goes into the engineering of the material, so you have to go down to the molecular scale and the nanoscale to the atoms have to be in the right place in this big chunk of metal.
Okay.
So sometimes when we're talking about nanotechnology or nanomaterials, we're not necessarily talking about individual small particles, but control of a big material at the molecular scale.
I see. So you can actually refine that large structure through the changes that you do in the small pieces.
Correct.
Okay. Well, why do the small pieces, the nanoparticles, behave differently than, I guess, the big pieces, the macroparticles? And how are we able to take advantage of those properties?
I mean, they behave differently basically because they're really, really small. And one way of looking at this is surface-to-volume ratio. Because the nanoparticles are so tiny, the properties attached to their bulk, like their mass, becomes much less important than the properties associated with their surface, such as chemical reactivity.
Okay.
But even stranger things can happen when particles get small. For example, when we talk about light, light has a certain wavelength in the hundreds of nanometers, visible light. So when a particle gets smaller than the wavelength of light, funny things happen, like the color of the particle changes. So it turns out for some nanoparticles, their color depends on their size.
I wanted to ask Mike a follow-up question. One that we haven't really talked about is how is to place nanoscale in context. How far are we talking?
Well, first of all, when we talk about nanometers, it's the size of a small molecule, so a few atoms, if you line them up in a row, would be about a nanometer long.
Okay.
And the nanometer, it's kind of hard because this is a very, very small scale, so it's a billionth of a meter or a millionth of a millimeter. But one sort of way of looking at it is if you took a hair out of your head,
uh-huh,
and you chopped it in half and you looked at the cross section, so you're looking at the width of your hair, that's about 70,000 nanometers wide.
That's huge then compared to a tiny nanoparticle.
Oh, absolutely. These are very, very tiny things. So it's a long way down there.
Gail, I noticed that you have a section in your book on the pitfalls of nanotechnology.
There's a lot of really interesting challenges that come with using these new technologies. We've always had nanoparticles in our world from things like volcanoes and from forest fires, but we really don't know much at all about how human-engineered particles affect living organisms. So in addition to environmental impacts about having the particles out in our air and water, there are a number of other potential side effects for new technologies, including ethical questions. We currently use nanoparticles to label some materials, and this is a very good thing. If you want to, for example, track an explosive from the plant where it's created to a site where it's used. But what if your clothing gave off a sort of a nano dust that could track your every movement? And this might not be something that we particularly want.
Sure.
Some futurists have said that one of the greatest impacts of nanotechnology is going to be the loss of privacy to individuals, because computers now will be tiny sizes and you'll have little tiny nano-sized monitors that might monitor your health or detect different kinds of pollution. So there's lots of potential really good consequences, and then there's some that are not so good. We have two different chapters in our book that look at ways in which nanotechnology could be positive or negative. One of our chapters is called Promise or Peril, Nanotechnology and the Environment, and the other is Too Little Privacy, the Ethics of Nanotechnology.
Tell me a little bit about one of those chapters. How is it that a student could understand those ethical questions a little more deeply?
Okay, so the ethical questions for Too Little Privacy, in that particular activity, students consider three different scenarios. One of them is using nano labels, and we want them to think about things like, you know, would you want somebody to know, for example, what brand of underwear you buy, or what kind of food you're buying in the grocery store? Maybe you're buying those, you know, fattening cookies, and do you really want people to be able to track everything you use in this world? But a positive influence could actually be, suppose you had your grandfather had Alzheimer's and you wanted him to have a distinctive sort of label where his movements could be tracked easily. So there's some real interesting potential implications of having technology that's this small. I mean, in terms of tracking things, it could be good or bad. The students in that particular activity also, in the Too Little Privacy activity, also look at issues related to health. And so things like, what if you had monitors that could, that were so small that they could detect whether or not you, if you had diabetes, whether or not you needed to get more insulin, or, so all of your health issues could be both, labeled as well as monitored, and perhaps even with a way to trigger an alarm. The negative on that one, so the positive would be it could be life-saving. The negative is that you might one day have these sorts of labels that would let, you know, if you went through into a store, they would immediately know if you had a cold or if you had a particular kind of disease. And so we may not always want everyone to be able to identify exactly what our health issues just by looking at us. So there could be both positive and negative in that particular case.
Running for public office, or you're trying to get insurance.
Absolutely.
Why do you think there is a need for this sort of book?
Advances in nanoscale science and research have just exploded, and it's happened very rapidly. So combined with all the new research and new innovations that are being made, the federal government is putting many millions of dollars into nanoscale research. There's a real need for us to educate the next generation of students and citizens that are going to need to know what this is. And there's not very many resources right now available for teachers to use to teach about nanotechnology and nanoscale science. So we found that from doing workshops with teachers around the country that teachers are very hungry for easy-to-use materials that use everyday things that they can integrate into their current science curriculum.
How is the federal government investing in it? What are they doing?
I want Mike to answer that one.
Mike?
Well, Gail's right. There's an enormous amount of money going into nanoscience, and it's I would say it's primarily going toward biomedical research, nanomaterials, like I described. Most of it's just going for, you know, just advances in human health and in advanced materials. And I should also point out a lot of money is going toward education. A lot of money earmarked for nanoscience and nanotechnology research and education is going toward education research.
There's already nano products out there that kids are using, and they see nano in their world, from pants that don't appear to stain to specially treated Band-Aids or stronger bicycles or new paints for their car. So people are already encountering nanotechnology in their world, and there's a strong interest in having people understand and not be afraid of the new advancements that they're seeing and then the rapid explosion of they're going to see of new products that come out in the future.
Amy, what instructional goals did you have when you were putting the book together?
Well, we wanted an inquiry format that would be easy for the teachers to follow, so we used a modified learning cycle approach. The activities are designed so that they can be used individually to supplement the curriculum or as a group to teach nanoscale science as like a unit. All of the activities use simple, inexpensive materials, as we know teachers need to do that sometimes. And we took the key concepts of the nanoscience and engineering, and we aligned them with all the science domains as well as mathematics. Because the nanoscience is basically an interdisciplinary domain, it can be linked to all sorts of instructional goals of education. And, for instance, the virus activity called biological nanomachines can actually fit into the curriculum for biology, physics, and mathematics.
Amy, as a former science teacher, are there other concepts a teacher can get across to her students through the use of nanotechnology activities?
Yeah, since it's so interdisciplinary, like the nanotechnology concepts fits with all the science classes. Most of the activities can be adapted for middle school through high school ages, as well as for all the different science classes and even math class. For example, there are activities that cover concepts like relative scale, powers of 10, microscopes, molecular behavior, technological applications, as well as how those applications may affect society or the environment.
Amy, do you also provide tips for teachers from these different disciplines to work together? Ways that, for example, the math teacher can incorporate these science activities into his or her curriculum?
Certainly. Like at the beginning of the book, there's a couple of tables that show how all the different activities could be placed in all the different classes. And then within the each activity, there's like teacher background to kind of give suggestions on how you could approach it or how you could work it into different kinds of classes. And a lot of the activities have like cross-curriculum type of goals. So like you may be doing something mathematical, but there's like a written component as well. So it kind of flows that way.
Great. Gail, could you give us an example of how you would use this with students?
Yes, one of my very favorite activities in the book is called Biomimicry, the Mystery of the Lotus Effect. And in this activity, students use a forensics approach to investigate a murder scene, and their goal is to figure out why a particular plant that's in the murder scene isn't splattered with blood. During the activities, they look at what's called the lotus effect. And the lotus effect has been known for many years, and in Asian cultures, the lotus plant has been revered because it appears to always stay clean and pure. And so there's a number of other plants that mimic this effect. One of them is the elephant ear. So we use this, and those are the big, giant green leaves that people often have in their gardens. So the students encounter this elephant ear plant in a murder scene, and they have to figure out why there's no blood on that plant, but there's blood everywhere else. And through investigating different kinds of materials that soil the plant and use different kinds of liquids, they figure out that the plant has a sort of a self-cleaning effect to it, and it has to do with the way the plant is actually constructed. And so we use this as a launching point for them to think about how new technologies might be made, things like new stain-free fabrics, how they might be constructed. And so I like this activity a lot as a teacher because it uses an inquiry investigation to get them to think about a new innovation that they really can't see. So they use a sort of a macro scale leaf to look at a very, very tiny nanoscale phenomenon.
Amy, how would a teacher incorporate the activities into his or her curriculum?
Well, the book activities do not have to be used as one huge unit. I have known a tech ed teacher to do an entire unit on nanotechnology, but most science teachers with testing have to focus on the national standards in the curriculum. And only two of the activities, one is called That's Huge and the other one is One in a Billion, actually need to be completed in sequence. And other than those two, the teacher can choose which activities he or she would like to use for different instructional units.
Gail, Mike, and Amy, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk to me today. For more information about nanoscale science activities for grades 6 through 12, including the introductory materials and a chapter on viruses, which are nature's nanomachines, go to www.nsta.org and click on the Science Store. This is Tyson Brown signing off from NSTA Press.
Time for the nano song.
All right, now we have Lodge McCammon with the nanotechnology song.
Nanotechnology, just tiny computers. A nano is a billionth of a meter, that's smaller than sugar. Removing the pollutants in water. Building stronger bikes so kids can get to soccer when the soccer balls never do get flat. Nanotechnology's fat.